Baby boomers ruled America for years, still do in a political sense, but boomers are no longer the largest age cohort in the United States. Millennials now are. And what the frequent discussions of boomers versus millennials miss is that there's an entire generation between them. True, between roughly 1964 and 1982, that's Generation X, something like a middle child in American demographics. It's Gen X that's arriving in middle age now. Ada Calhoun documents the effects on herself and other women of the generation in the book Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. Ada Calhoun has received some rave reviews for her previous books, including the memoir Wedding Toasts I'll Never Give. Ada's shorter work has been published in the New York Times and the New Republic, among others. Ada Calhoun, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I'm struck by an anecdote in the very front of the book. I mean, you asked someone about midlife and a woman just broke into tears on you.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I thought, oh no, what did I say? Did I imply that she was older than she thought she was, or what was wrong? And she said, no, just no one ever asks about me. And I feel like that was a theme throughout these interviews that I did, where women tended to minimize their own experiences to say things like, oh, I'm so lucky, I have no right to complain. But when they opened up, you realize they have it pretty rough.
Did it start with your acknowledgement of what other women were going through, or with your own summer of discontent? You talk about a lot going on when you were 41.
Yeah, I had like the world's worst summer. I was broke and frustrated and felt old and like my career was over. And I felt very alone in it. And then this editor at Oprah.com called me and said, I'm unhappy. My friends are unhappy. Do you think you could maybe write about what's going on with our generation? And if there's any anything to all of our sadness. And I thought, oh no, like it's a trend story because there's four of us who are sad. forget it. But then I started digging into all the statistics around the rising cost of living, or how much debt we have, how ignored we've been culturally. And one thing after the other just pointed to a real crisis.
So this led to an actual piece at Oprah.com called The New Midlife Crisis in 2017. Did women volunteer their own stories in response to that piece?
They sure did. Well, even when I was doing the work to try to get those voices in the article, I talked to dozens of women. We found them mostly through like the social media channels of Oprah magazine. And they were really frank. But then when that story came out, the floodgates just opened. I got hundreds of messages from women who were very eager to talk about how they related to that story and what they were going through.
You talk in the book as well about getting in touch with a reporter friend in Washington asking for help finding women in midlife crisis. And what was the response there?
So I called her. I said, you know, I'm trying to work on this story. Do you have anybody that I could talk to about going through a midlife crisis? And she was quiet. And, you know, she has a pretty good life from the outside. She had this boyfriend, these three grown children, you know, new dog, leafy street. And finally she spoke and she said, I'm trying to think of a single woman I know who's not.
Wow. I mean, I laugh, but the fact is, it's just like that's quite ubiquitous. Is there any basis for comparison? I mean, do we know if Generation X is feeling this more than the boomers did? I mean, the millennials haven't gotten there yet, so there's no comparison there.
I've been trying not to make it a competition between who had it worse, because
right.
Obviously, boomers had to go through the Vietnam War, and our grandmothers, you know, many of them went through the Depression, and there have been objective stresses on women forever. And I think what I was looking at was how it's different for our generation. And the truth is, most of our mothers and grandmothers were not working full-time while raising small children, while taking care of aging parents, while going through perimenopause, while dealing with breaking news alerts on their phones every 2 seconds. And it's just a new level of overwhelm and stress.
All kinds of things coming together one time, life circumstances and the world around you as well.
Exactly.
Now, I adopted your terminology to introduce the segment of calling Generation X a middle child, forgotten between boomers and millennials. Why is that, do you think?
Well, first of all, there's our size. So, you know, we were born during the baby bust. There are a lot less of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we also were neglected in our youth, many of us who weren't paid attention to. So it's been a theme. Almost everyone I know from this generation was a latchkey kid and watched an obscene amount of television. We were left to fend for ourselves in many ways. Most of us, or I guess 40% of us, were the children of divorce, and that was different back then. There wasn't co-parenting as we know it now. I think we've been ignored and dismissed for a long time, and I hope this book makes us look more realistically at our lives and what we've overcome.
Now, again, this is primarily about midlife crisis for women, but while we're here, I mean, do men often get more attention for their midlife crises than women?
I think like every Michael Douglas movie and every Woody Allen movie and Kevin Spacey has contributed to the genre. I think, you know, and so many novels. Think of all the great American novels that are about this very thing. I think we've paid so much attention over the years to what men go through in midlife, the second they start losing their hair and the, you know, the college final comes out and they get the cars and the girlfriends. And I just think in all of that, no one has really asked, what about the women? Are they fine? And that's why we're not hearing from them. And what I found again and again talking to women is that they were really suffering and really going through a lot of existential angst, and they were still getting the kids to school on time. They were still getting the PowerPoint presentation together. They were still getting the teachers the gift baskets. They were still doing everything to hold the family together and to hold it together at work, and they were sneaking in whatever crisis they were having around the edges of their day.
Are there symbols for a women's midlife crisis? I mean, they don't have the sports car and the trophy bride like the men do. Is there any symbology that works for women?
I think staring at the ceiling in the middle of the night is the thing that came up again and again.
Which brings us back to the title of the book, Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. Ada Calhoun is the author of the book and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. You had just mentioned the things expected of women, taking care of the home, taking care of the job, making a great PowerPoint presentation. Let's talk about the concept of having it all. It sounds like a lot of Gen X women talk about this.
Yeah, I think we were really led to believe early on that was something that not only could we do, but we should do it. So I think that there was this idea that we had infinite possibilities, and I think that those possibilities created a lot of pressure.
So I mean, we're the idea of you can do it all, you can be anything you want. I mean, these are things that ultimately led women to reach out further than they might have otherwise?
Yeah, I think to believe that if, you know, we could do anything, so we must do everything. That's what I heard over and over again from women I talked to, that if they'd only done one thing, if they'd only raised a family, if they'd only had a job, if they had only rebuilt a house, whatever it was, it wasn't enough. They had this sense that everything had to be done, everything had to be done perfectly, and that's something I just heard again and again, this sense of failure if women hadn't achieved more. And I do think that that came from how we grew up, hearing things like, you know, oh, you want to be a nurse? Don't be a nurse, be a doctor. And the fact is, it's extremely hard not only to have everything, but to have, you know, even some of it, I think, is hard at this age.
You say you heard again and again. Let people know how many people you talked to for this book, because it's quite a few.
It was about 200.
Okay.
And I tried to really get a diverse group from all over the country. I stuck with middle-class women because I feel like we hear so much on reality shows about rich women, and I think that poor women have so many more obstacles that I thought that was too big a topic for this particular book. But I just looked at the vast middle of women who tend to think, oh, I'm lucky, you know, I have enough, I should feel better, why don't I?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that sounds like a question they ask themselves a lot.
I heard it again and again, and I heard it from women who, you know, who say had three great kids, and they would say, you know, what did I do wrong? Why didn't I ever get a career too? Or I heard it from a woman who had a really lucrative career, and she said, you know, I always thought I'd have a partner and children by now. What did I do wrong? And I do think that women tend to turn their shame inward and to sort of critique themselves and think that it was all on their shoulders to do more, do better. And what I'm trying to argue in the book is that we didn't grow up in a vacuum, and we don't live in one now, and there are forces at work that are beyond our control.
I want to get to those forces in just a moment, but first I want to talk about some of the choices that people did make in trying to have it all. What kinds of life choices have they made, particularly in things like timing?
Well, our generation waited quite a bit to get married, to have children. We've pushed that age of first child and first marriage up higher than it's ever been in American history, and that was a really reasonable thing to do. We were trying to get established in our careers. We were trying to have money in the bank before we brought a kid into the world, and that was logical. The downside, though, is that now a lot of us are raising small children while working full-time, while usually taking care of aging parents, and of course, our parents, the boomers, are living longer than people ever have, and they're living longer with chronic conditions, and there are a lot less of us in this generation to take care of them. So it's falling primarily on women, women in their late 40s, women who are already working full-time, and often who have young children at the same time. And it's a recipe for real burnout.
Oh, a sandwich generation is what you've called it in the book, the sense that you're getting squeezed in both. So you're in the middle of this.
Yeah, we've heard that term sandwich generation for a while, and I think the younger boomers were the pioneers in this this level of pressure. But in the book, I refer to it also as the caregiving rack, because I do feel like sandwich sounds too friendly for what a lot of women I talk to are going through. A lot of them describe feeling like they were on something like a rack, being pulled from one end by their parents, one end by their children.
Getting stretched, yeah, big time. Ada Calhoun is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. So we just started to get into some of the outside forces that work on women of Generation X and middle age. Let's talk about some of the other stuff, too, like sharp increases in college costs while Generation X was in school.
Yeah, so a lot of us are still paying off student loan debt while then we're starting to help our kids pay for college now. And that college isn't the only cost that's gone up. So housing costs have gone up, healthcare has gone up exponentially, and we're dealing with all of this while also having hit a lot of recession and bust issues along the way to building our careers. So one woman after another that I talked to described just feeling total money panic.
All right. So really concerned about the financial stuff. I mean, a lot of credit card debt, too. And you experienced some of that in your own summer of discontent, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, as a freelancer, a lot of freelancers tend to get through to the next check by doing things like, you know, taking out or getting some stuff on credit cards. And I had definitely done that. I was anticipating three big checks, and none of them materialized. And so I was spending that summer looking at these credit card bills and feeling really hopeless. And I'm really glad that Oprah Magazine called me and offered me this story.
So talk about, in addition to forces like increases in college costs, and I was looking at the list. If you want to go to the National Center for Educational Statistics, you can look year by year at what's happened to college costs, public and private. It's really a fascinating table to look at if you're a table geek like I am. But but let's talk about the historical markers of life while Generation X was growing up, the things that were going on societally and in the news that you feel influenced your generation.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of us graduated into weak job markets. You know, older Gen Xers entered the workforce during the early 90s recession, followed by the jobless recovery. And then some of the younger Gen Xers got the stock market highs of the late 90s. But then, of course, the dot-com bubble burst. And then there was the 2001 recession, the post-9/11 economy, on and on. And then I think Gen X got hit harder than anybody else with the housing crisis, because that was just, of course, the moment that they were finally going to get their piece of the American dream, and then it blew up and they wound up underwater.
Well, as you point out, Generation X has almost comically bad timing.
It's a little ridiculous, yeah. I mean, and that was something that I was almost laughing at working on this book. I thought, one more thing that we got wrong, and some generational researchers have called us the 13th generation, because we are the 13th generation post-founding fathers, and then also because the number 13 is unlucky, and we sure have been.
Wow. Another marketing tag for your generation. Wow. I want to talk about some of the other outside forces, though, things that didn't necessarily directly affect you, but you were aware of. I mean, the crime, for example, and inflation, and the Soviet Union, and fear of atomic war.
Yeah, Generation X children were raised usually as latchkey kids. A lot of our parents were absent, and the economy was quite bleak. Politically, of course, there was this constant threat of nuclear war. There were a ton of movies about it, and we weren't really sheltered a lot in the way that we hear that millennial and Gen Z kids are sheltered from what's going on. It was usually in our face, and also crime was so high, and we were on our own so much. I heard one story after another from women about traumas they'd encountered in their childhood, and that they'd said, you know, now we talk about how we overprotect our children, and they say, like, oh, you shouldn't wrap them in bubble wrap, you shouldn't be so cautious with them. But a lot of the women I talked to said it was a response to what they'd been through themselves. They wanted their own kids to have a much more protected life than they'd had.
So I mean, were they victims of crime or things like that?
I mean, sexual assault was a very big deal in the 70s and 80s. You know, muggings, you know, I know my apartment was broken into when I was a kid. Like, it was a very rough time for children.
You do mention the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, and the fact that it hasn't been a lot of follow up work on it. But do you find that ACEs fell more heavily upon Gen X?
I wish I had more studies about this, because I really do anecdotally believe that this is something that we dealt with in a disproportionate way. So I talked to a bunch of experts, and they said there wasn't good enough data about it, but that definitely they could say that Gen X was the least parented generation, that we were the ones who were left to fend for ourselves the most, and this was during a really high crime period, so it would stand to figure that we would have dealt with this more than other generations had. It's impossible to prove, unfortunately, but I wish somebody would do some research about that.
I was thinking about the absence of parents, and remembering that boomers tell these stories too, but it was usually mom would say, you know, come home when the street lights come on, that sort of thing. But mom was home. That's the big difference, is that Gen Xers didn't have mom at home. And I'm guessing this is because their parents, the boomers, were the first generation to have both parents working?
That's part of it. And I think also there was this move away from communities, away from the neighborhood where everybody was kind of in each other's business. That was definitely something that our grandparents had, and they had the Rotary Clubs, and they had all these eyes on the street. And I think that when the boomers were in middle age, they were busy. They had jobs, many of them. Many of them had moved away from their families. And then, of course, 40% of them or so were divorced and trying to make it without help. And that was a recipe, I think, for a lot of Gen X kids being alone in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the latchkey kid syndrome we've talked about. Ada Calhoun is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. It is very much about Generation X, the generation we don't hear much about because it is smaller than the boomers, smaller than the millennials, and it's the generation in between, the middle child, as Ada puts it. You can join the conversation on the Exchange with questions, comments, share some experiences of your own in midlife. We'd love to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Give me a quick sidetrack on culture. This is an interesting generation because you kind of went straight from broadcast TV to MTV and then way beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that was something that over and over again, the women I interviewed would sing songs from The Facts of Life or from the famous, notorious, actually, Anjali ads for perfume, where the woman brings home the bacon and fries it up in the pan and never lets you forget you're a man. And there was a lot of culture directed toward women in that era that really sank down into our bones, I think.
Okay, yeah, the advertising messages I really pick up on myself, having watched a lot of broadcast TV as a kid. There's still some, I can remember some cigarette commercials I can still sing the jingles to. But
I can still sing the Slinky songs, and there's a few of them. And the Mikey Likes It. A lot of those advertising campaigns were incredibly successful at getting in our heads.
I noticed the level of detail you put into the Slinky song in the text here.
It's still there.
So let's talk about marketing, though, to your generation, though, because it's interesting that marketers point out that for Generation X, life has not been stable. You quote this in a report on trying to sell to this generation.
Yeah, I found that so fascinating that the marketers, I feel like, know more about us than we do. I guess we shouldn't be surprised. But one thing they said is anything that will make life easier for Generation X, we can't get enough of. I mean, we're riveted by anything that is going to ease our lives, because they are so complicated and they are so exhausting.
Interesting. So what kinds of products then get pitched that way?
I mean, I think pretty much anything, like especially things for our kids. So anything that's going to increase our kids' educational advantages. We spend so much money, more money than anybody else, on our kids' education. And a lot of women told me stories, like one said that when she was a kid, she was considered an at-risk youth, and her Barbie doll clothes were made of scraps of fabric, and then her children go to French immersion school.
Wow. Okay.
So that's a classic example of, we didn't have a lot of actual advantages, and we're determined to give those advantages to our own children at whatever cost.
You report on Generation X as being a lonely generation, too. Is this because families got a lot smaller after the baby boom?
Yeah, we spent so much time alone, and most of us didn't have siblings because of this baby bust. So I think the combination of just time by ourselves, no siblings, parents working or away, I think all of that, and especially the sort of lack of community, that's one thing that I kept hearing about again and again. You know, it used to be that our mothers and grandmothers would hang out with other women and other people in the neighborhood, and that there was a kind of a family aspect to a lot of communities, and that really did go away in the 70s. And so we've just spent tons of time alone, and I think it really took its toll on us.
Let's take a phone call here. Ryan in Eugene is on the line. We're talking to Ada Calhoun, the author of Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. Hi, Ryan.
Well, good morning. It's just a fascinating conversation again, Jeffrey. Thank you very much. But one of the things that I was aware of, being a child of the 60s and having children in the 80s, was that there was a lot of media fear marketing that was television is looking for audiences, and I'm particularly thinking of productions was one where the statistics of the number of these was not trivial, but was small, but it was projected as if it was happening to every child on every street corner all the time, and it hasn't ended. And I just think that colored that transition between the laissez-faire, image of the boomers, me, and our children.
So, Ryan, we got a bit of a cell phone garble there. Did you say child abductions? That's the stuff that was overreported?
Well, that was one of the things that the media really pushed. I'm sorry for the cell phone.
Okay.
But they just pushed it. They pushed it like it was happening all the time. And the perception, I think, in the community was that it was happening to every child everywhere, when I think one statistic was there was 7 that year.
Mm-hmm. 7 stranger abductions, yeah, because a lot of parental custody abductions was, that was the vast majority of them. So, but I can hear you chiming in here, Ada.
Well, I was going to say, I'm sure I'm not the only one, and maybe you all had this too, who would have breakfast in the school cafeteria, and on the little milk cartons, you have the missing images and the little grainy black and white pictures of the kid who had not been found. And I think that you're right, that there is a question of how much was this real and how much was it sold to us as you should be afraid. And I think when it comes to how we felt as children, it almost doesn't matter because we weren't necessarily digging into the research, but the idea that we were subjected to this constant drumbeat of you're in danger, no one's going to help you, I think that it set us up for a lot of anxiety, and we were a very anxious generation. I do think you're right that had a part in it.
Has there been a chance for Gen X to relax much since they became adults themselves, though? I mean, obviously, we're talking about them feeling a lot of anxiety in midlife. I'm just wondering if there was ever particularly a time from you and the people you've talked to, whether they felt like things were about where people thought they'd be.
So some felt that way. I think that I'm not saying that every woman who grew up in Generation X is now miserable, but this book is for the women who are suffering and who are really having a hard time. It's not for the ones who are totally happy. And I feel like what I heard again and again from these women is that they started working when they were 12, 13, 14 years old. I know I did, babysitting and working, for a restaurateur and all these people, because we had this sense like no one was going to help us and we had to just do it for ourselves. And that has been a tone throughout many, many women's lives in this country, where we just thought, like, if we take a break, who knows what will happen? But bad things probably will happen. And I think that has continued. And I didn't hear a lot of from a lot of women who were able to just kick back and think, oh, I'll be fine.
We've established that Generation X certainly was given the idea that you can be everything. You can do anything. You can have it all, as you point out, which provided a lot of pressure as time went on for women as they grew into adulthood in Generation X. But, there's also, you'd assume, some changing of roles for men as well. And I haven't asked up to this point whether Gen X men are any better at picking up some of the load that usually falls on women in duties at home.
They are better. Definitely they're much better than their fathers were. So a lot of Gen X men will say, my father never even changed a diaper, and here I am picking up the kid 2 days a week. Here I am making dinner, you know, a couple nights a week. And they're very proud of themselves, as they should be. But what a lot of studies show is that they think they do more than they do, and that women still do far more than the men in their lives. And I think the downside of how much better men are now is that that they get a lot of credit for how much better they are than their fathers, and then women are told, "Oh, you're so lucky. You know, your husband cleans the house." And now, of course, if he cleans the house once a month and she cleans the house 12 times a month, she's still frustrated, but then she's also told she shouldn't be complaining. Look how much better she has it than her mother did.
Well, yeah, but the number was not impressive. I think I saw something like that, like, you know, men of Gen X get up to do 8 hours of housework a week, which doesn't seem like a big number considering how many hours are spent in the household, particularly when kids are being raised.
It's really true, and that's something that is shown again and again in studies, that women still do a really disproportionate amount of both child care and taking care of the household. And, you know, I think it's more child care than their mothers did who were staying at home with them. But then, of course, they're working many, many more hours out of the home at the same time. And I will say, too, that the expectations of parents are just way higher now than they were. So you could be somebody who worked and who just had their kids come home with the latchkey and watch television, and that is really frowned upon now in middle class circles. Women are supposed to be helping the kids with homework and really involved in their lives in a way that that just adds more and more hours to their week.
So is it the Gen X parents who are the helicopter parents we hear so often about?
They are, yeah. I mean, this is something that really, I think, started with us, with sort of older boomers, and then it seems to be continuing, is just this this real emphasis on our children and our children's well-being, which I think is to our credit. I think we really do want our children to succeed and to have advantages that we didn't have.
Does it get to extremes, though? I mean, when you get into areas like Tiger Mom and that kind of stuff? I mean...
Yeah, I think it definitely can. I do think that there is something of the pendulum that swings back and forth, and I think generationally it would make sense for us who had sort of limited parenting involvement from our parents to maybe go a little bit in the other direction sometimes with their own children.
All right, so in the midst of all this other pressure, then, hello, menopause comes along in midlife. Yeah, so talk up, if you would, about the cycle of stress and menopause and how those tend to affect each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I had never even heard the word perimenopause until a couple of years ago. And, you know, I'm fairly well educated. I go to my doctor appointments every year. And I was surprised in researching this book how little work has been done on issues affecting women at this stage of life. I think it's only something like 20% of gynecologists who receive specific training in menopause medicine. And it's just something that's been really neglected. And it affects women in very profound ways often. Menopause usually hits around 51, but perimenopause, those years leading up to it, and it can be 10 years, really involves a ton of fluctuation in hormones that affects sleep, it affects weight gain, it affects mood, certainly, and it's like puberty, but it can be much more intense, and of course, it affects you right when you're trying to do a million other things.
So the hormonal fluctuations, are we actually talking hot flashes by age 41 for some people?
It is true for some people. I can't remember the percentage of that particular symptom. But sleeplessness and issues with weight and those mood swings that can feel out of nowhere. And I think almost every woman I interviewed described feeling either sudden sorrow or sudden rage and not really knowing where it came from. Women described throwing their phone against the wall or screaming, and they thought, oh, what's wrong with me? Why is this happening? Well, if you look at the medicine and all the research around perimenopause, it's quite obvious. It's the ovarian function going up and down and up and down in this way that can cause the body to feel incredibly chaotic.
I can imagine a certain amount of reluctance in revealing some of this information in the book, though, because the last thing you want to do is give anybody grounds to say, oh, it's just your hormones.
Well, and I think it's so funny. People say, oh, it's just your hormones. Well, of course, like, everything is your hormones, right? Like, sexual desire is your hormones, and reproduction is your hormones, and sleep is very connected to hormones. I think almost everything that we do or feel is connected in one way or another to hormones, so why would we dismiss it as not that important?
Right, yeah, that's a good point. So way beyond just, you know, there's a lot going on with hormones, a lot of things. Yeah, when you want to eat, all that stuff comes with hormones.
Exactly.
So obviously, there's a double entendre to the title, Why We Can't Sleep, because part of this is not just the conditions of your life, but what's going on with your body, too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very funny because I think I like the title, but I worry some people pick it up thinking, oh, I'm going to finally fall asleep. It's going to be the 10-step solution to, you know, how to get to bed. And it's not that. But I do think that looking at these problems in a frank way actually it has a relaxing effect on us. At least it does on me.
Well, you know, and I was impressed by the number of women who you talked to who did not even think of their situation as a crisis. But once you asked for details about what was going on in their lives, they went, oh, because I'd call this a crisis if it happened to somebody else.
It's true. And that happened again and again. And I think I was maybe even resistant to that word at first. Like, oh, it's not a midlife crisis. I'm just frustrated about money. I'm frustrated about career. I'm frustrated about my hormones. Like, and it's not that bad. Again, I'm so lucky. And I think that is something women have really been trained to think, you know, oh, I'm not in a war-torn region. I'm not going through a depression in the economy. And therefore, I have no right to complain. And I think that women do have a right to complain. I think things are hard on them. And I think we get to talk about how hard it is to do this much caregiving while also trying to work full-time and have a fulfilling career and do everything for our children. And I think it's a lot. And I think crisis is not too strong a word.
Here again, I'm coming back to asking whether men help much. I mean, they do more work at the home. We talked about that part of it. But can men fly off the handle more easily or complain about their situation more readily? I mean, we obviously think it's cute, midlife crisis for men, if we talk about it in terms of the trophy wife and the red sports car. You know, we've got symbols for that. There's nothing that compares with women.
No, I think it's not as cinematic what women experience in midlife. I think that we tend to be much quieter about our feelings. And it's funny because you always hear like, oh, women are always talking about their emotions. But I think when it comes to this part of life, I think that women often get very quiet. And I think that men are out there talking about how they don't feel young anymore and the Viagra commercials certainly play into this. And I think meanwhile, women tend to think like, I just have to get through the day. I just have to get through this. And it's all on me. So what I'm trying to do with the book is to say it's not all you. If you haven't done everything you thought you were going to do in life, if you are having a rough experience of midlife, there are a lot of reasons for that that aren't just that you didn't work hard enough.
I want to talk about the workplace just a bit because you talked about some of the concerns with money and jobs. Jobs is a big one. And you talk again about the almost comically bad timing of Generation X, that just when Generation X was getting out of college, recession, when Generation X was rebuilding income and wealth, recession. Let's talk about jobs, though. Is it any help in the workplace that so many boomers have retired or will soon?
They're not, though. I mean, that's something that I heard again and again was that that a lot of Generation X workers have these millennials coming up hot behind them and taking over the jobs, especially any jobs that are involved in social media or anything that we perceive millennials to be so good at, and that boomers are holding on and they're not retiring and they're not emptying that upper level of management at a lot of companies. So Gen X feels squeezed often on both sides.
Hmm. So I really struggle with wording this question. I did it about three different ways yesterday, and I'm still sort of looking at it. What I'm looking for is to see if there was a zone you found of women who were upset, you know, having, you know, some misgivings about midlife because of their own circumstances, and if there's another set of any noticeable size about women who were just sort of not crazy about the state of the world. They thought the world would be a better place by now.
Yeah, I heard that again and again. I think that's very perceptive. The world is like so much with us, right, because of our phones. And we are the first generation to hit middle age with this phone in our pocket and with breaking news alerts. And, you know, I don't know that the world is objectively worse now than it ever has been. I think there have been periods of really rough times throughout American history. But if you look at like the American Psychological Association studies, we think it's worse. Almost all of us think it's worse, not just Gen X, although Gen X is the most worried and upset, of course. But even people who lived through the Depression and the Vietnam War will say, no, things are worse now. And I do wonder if that has something to do with the fact that we hear about it 24 hours a day.
Huh. Well, sure, if it's right there in your hand all the time. You don't have to wait till 6 o'clock to turn the TV on and get told by the yeah. local anchor. Yeah,
exactly.
So the process of trying to find some things that can comfort each other here, I mean, looking for allies, you point out it is notoriously hard to make new friends in middle age. Have you found some ideas for where to go to start the process?
Yeah, it's the thing that has helped me more than anything else at this stage of life is finding other women who are going through similar things and spending time with them. And I started a club where we meet once a month and we talk about everything, and it's fantastic. It really has changed my life, and I encourage any woman who is going through anything to do the same thing and just get a few women that you know who are roughly your age and get a bar that's fun and nice and cheap and meet there once a month, and everybody who can come makes it, and anybody who can't make it that month doesn't, and you get so much out of these experiences.
Is anybody actually changing the circumstances of their lives, or is it just that they get a chance to talk about it and feel like they got kindred spirits?
I think it does change your experience of your life when you're able to reframe what you're going through. I think once you see it more clearly, and once you have other people validate what you're going through, not only do you usually get tips and tricks and real material help in various ways, but also I think you're just able to see it as, you know, it's not like you screwed something up. It's not like you should be doing better than you are, that actually you're a resilient person and actually you have been through a lot and you're doing better than anybody else probably would be doing in this exact moment, and you should feel good about that.
Are there parents any help? Are the women of the baby boom a help in understanding what midlife crisis feels like, or is it just that different for Gen Xers, you think?
It's funny, I've heard from a lot of women who wound up having really good conversations with their mothers because of this book, and I'm so glad of that, because I do think that we get pitted against each other so often generationally. I think, you know, women who had kids or didn't have kids, or women who work or don't work, I think there's a tendency to really, for the culture to like want us to fight. And I think that where we can have conversations that are productive, we all benefit from them, and I think that the women of the prior generation are learning a lot from their daughters, and I think we are learning a lot from our mothers about what we went through and what we have to offer.
You write of waking up at 4 a.m. and not going through the old routine, just going back to sleep. What worked for you?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I still wake up. Sometimes I still stare at the ceiling a bit. But writing this book really did cure my midlife crisis. I really feel like I'm on the other side of it. And I'm just able to see so much more clearly what I and what my generation has faced. And I'm proud of us. I think we're doing okay.
Midlife Crisis from a Generation X Perspective, provided in the book Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. Ada Calhoun is of Generation X and writes about it in the book. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
No, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much.
Sure. Take care.